Welcome back to another Your Game, Our Passion podcast, along with the Talking Calcio podcast you can find on the Game Nashville Sports Network. I'm Nick Frazier, also alongside Claudio Villalobos with Nashville Total Sports. Claudio, there's a lot to get into in this episode. We both got a lot of thoughts on Nashville SC's previous match versus FC Dallas, or against FC Dallas, that is, a 0-0 draw, which is, you know, to be expected without Sam Surridge. But there were some things that happened in that match. Christian Espinoza had some chances missed. Matthew Corcoran with a red card. How does that impact the club, or especially the team going forward this upcoming Saturday? Was it a lost opportunity for Nashville? We'll get into that a little bit. Nashville SC as well was in a 4-3-3 formation. We saw a little bit of that. Corcoran in the middle, tag Seth and Yaz back on each side. Something we don't really get to see on a general basis with this team. And then we saw this morning, earlier this morning, that is, on March the 5th, League's Cup schedule was released. Interesting thoughts about that, Claudio, because the scheduling's pretty tight. Like, we're talking August, 5th, 7th, and 12th, or 5th, 9th, and 12th. I mean, these are back-to-back-to-back. It's kind of crazy. And then at the end of the episode, we will definitely give our projections for the starting 11 of Minnesota match day 3, and as well give our goal scorers and so forth of the predictions of the game. But overall, Claudio, your thoughts, initial thoughts about the last Saturday's match against FC Dallas.
All right, Nick, happy to be here again. Happy to know you're doing good as well.
Yeah, healthy. I'm healthy as an ox. Anyway,
yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of stuff to talk about the game for sure, and what's going on here. It seems, I love soccer, but it seems to be way too much. I don't know. Hopefully not. I guess the problem, maybe we're mixing it up a little bit with the World Cup in terms of what we're watching. But let's not forget that the teams are going to be off for a long time during the World Cup as well. So, but anyways, going back to the game, I thought that I think we discussed this before the game, Nick, that this was going to be the first true test for Nashville Soccer Club, because I mean, take it the way you want it, but New England was still not the team to beat this Nashville. Not at least, maybe not this season. Maybe later. Who knows what's going to happen with that team? But it wasn't the team to give them a hard time, really. And we thought Dallas would. They did. They look like a more organized team. And they're still undefeated, anyways. Just like Nashville. But I do believe that there was a lot of opportunity for a victory, just because the best chances in the whole game, which there weren't that many either, they were Nashville had them and could score. I mean, Christian Espinoza had those two opportunities that in most cases he probably scored both of them, and they end up with two goals in a game. But well, I mean, even greater players have done that in every even more important competition. But that's part of what it is. I mean, and then Corcoran. Well, I mean, that's part of the youth learning, I guess, that a guy like him has to have. Because honestly speaking, there was nothing to that play. It was right there in the middle of the field. No danger at all. No. There was not even a good transition going on forward for Dallas when he did that. And well, and the results are not good for Nashville, because the way that Corcoran has been playing is a key piece that Nashville doesn't want to miss, even as a starter or coming off from the bench.
Yeah, and to that point, Claudio, when we look at a guy like Matthew Corcoran play, he plays so mature and as if he's been a veteran in this league for so long, that is. And adding on to just his performance, I thought he played well. I thought the way that Nashville spread out the ball, it was a little difficult because of that three at the back that they played against FC Dallas, and having that congested midfield of the five midfielders. I get why BJ Callahan probably went to that 4-3-3 to cut off more of those passing lanes, because we know that in that 4-2-2 formation, that is, he likes to, you know, use Tag Seth and use Yaz back and forth. But no, you got to add a third midfielder in there just to kind of break up the monotony, and also just make sure there's nothing that gets in between the middle. Because again, we all know that Yazbek and Tag Seth can get a lot of miles on their legs for sure. But when you add a third midfielder, that takes off a little bit of stress. And then for Corcoran's sake in that game, adding a third midfielder, you're trying to exploit those flanks with Espinoza and Madrigal. And if you're not able to do that with that three at the back, it's very difficult. So again, it was a tough matchup for Nashville. You say it's a little bit of a lost opportunity. I say it's a growing pain for Nashville is the best way to put it. Growing pain is probably the best way I think it is. I mean, yes, it is a bit of a lost opportunity. You make a good point about Espinoza, which we'll get to in a little bit. But I think overall with the young players and the chemistry, for it only being the second match in all of MLS played for them this season, I think it's a decent result.
You know, there's a few things that we can practically pinpoint. I'm not saying at all. I don't think Nashville played. It was a very decent game for Nashville, even because it was away to begin with and a difficult field and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I mean, perhaps when you're talking about learning process, I guess one thing that maybe, which I don't think I was going to talk about something like this this early anyways, it seems like one of the things that this thing needs to learn, and it hasn't been forced to do it yet, was to learn how to play without Sam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that, and again, we talked about it. It's not that Nashville cannot play without him. Yes, it can. But it seems like at this point, it was too early for the team to actually accomplish being with Sam and the way he's been playing lately up front. And you know, even we have Warren Madrigal with capabilities and everything else, it seems like there was something missing right there. And I'm not going to go as bad as say that Sam was missing. Of course he was missed, but what it misses is the style of play that Nashville chose whenever he's in the field. And even when Warren's in the field, all of them are being in the field at the same time, and the team look a little better because it's way more organized. It seemed like there was a lot of stuff that needed to be happening at this time that it was sort of new to the team when he was performing, that it didn't happen the way maybe BJ would have loved to. And so, I mean, that I think, I believe he's coming back for this weekend, which Nashville probably need him, but against a better team, which is Minnesota even. But, you know, those little key factors were prevented Nashville from bringing three points home, in my opinion.
Yeah, and looking at that, just result in general and also the formation of it, we talk about the midfield, but you mentioned the forwards there with Warren Madrigal, Christian Espinoza, Hany Mukhtar. We kind of saw the old Nashville SC a little bit when, you know, Sam Surge was first brought onto the team or into the club back in the League's Cup 2024. They had that 4-3-3, and it was almost as if Sam would play up top and they'd drift Hany out wide a little bit. They'd have that overlapping thing, and BJ kind of clicked on that and said, oh yeah, maybe we should do this going forward. Obviously, he wasn't there during the League's Cup run, but I'm just saying when he finally had a full offseason to kind of get with these guys, he kind of understood where they needed to play. But you look back at that this past game, the 4-3-3, Hany resembled that, you know, he's been playing deeper in the midfield. You know, we've realized that last season, obviously this season. And without Sam, and you made a great point, without him, he didn't know really what to do. And we've talked about this candidly off the podcast, along with just in the press room, so forth. Hany sometimes can be, you know, a little selfish with the ball. He likes to make things, try to make things in his own way. And it didn't really seem to pan out that way. Now, this time around, though, this past Saturday, he dropped back in the midfield, and you'd have those overlapping runs. Well, guess what? The one thing that wasn't really there was kind of those Corcoran diagonal balls to them. And when they were there, Madrigal, Espinoza took them head-on, and they crossed it into the box. Guess what? They're missing their tall guy. They're missing the Sam Surge that can put a head to the ball and put it in the back of the net.
And you probably know better than me what I'm going to say about just kind of adding up to what you said, Nick, in the type of work you do, sometimes I know for a fact, because of all the conversation we have, that you might have to do one day or not at the radio station more than you normally do, just because somebody's missing.
Right.
You know. And so I guess when you're coming from the house to your office, to your radio station, you're already thinking, wow, I'm gonna have to double my efforts. Even if you didn't have to, you already had that in your mind. So I'm not trying to be in Mukhtar's mind at all at that game, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was recognized that he thought he could actually have to be in charge of the whole team, the whole attack by himself, which it wasn't the case, just because, like you said, Sam Surridge was not there. And so he thought that he would have to play way different, which I don't think he did. He plays slightly different when he does because Sam wasn't there, but maybe he didn't have to. Maybe he didn't have to, you know. Maybe he didn't have to, and things would have worked better, especially up front, because the rest of the guys were there mostly. I mean, it's just the switch from Warren for up front for Surridge, but the rest of the stuff was there.
It was weird too, and I'm gonna go back to the midfield a little bit when it comes to just the formation of it all with a 4-3-3. When we mentioned how Hany would drop back in the midfield, he's been playing in a deeper, you know, central role. If And again, he kind of went up a little bit more as that top guy in the 4-3-3. In that case, that's when we saw Patrick Yazbek creep up from the right side of the midfield into that more of that three-quartista, the attacking midfielder role.
Yeah.
And then it split Corcoran and Tagseth out like they were in just a two midfield set. That's the interesting thing about this. It was almost a triangular cycle of Hani goes up, then Yazbek goes to that attacking midfield role, and then it becomes, you know, Tagseth drops back, and then you have Corcoran from the middle of the midfield shifts over to the right side of the midfield, then it becomes that triangle, that attacking triangular form. And again, that goes to what BJ was trying to do. And I think there was just a lot of things there in that match that they were just trying to juggle too much. It wasn't a circus act. My hands are all over the place like this, but it just seemed like there was a little too much congestion.
On the other hand, I mean, of course, the other coaches are the rivals are watching video, everything.
Sure.
They know what's been working well for Nashville. And you know, one of the things that was missing, maybe a couple of things besides what you already said in the middle, you know, all that dropping that Jasper was doing in previous games, almost all the way to become a third central defender and then start the transition from there, didn't happen in this game. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Dallas coaching staff saw that and knew that Nashville was bringing along very good transitions, even as far as our own box and to move it up, to move forward, where they kind of populated the middle so much that Jaspek didn't have that so much liberty to do all that. And at the same time, they probably knew that in previous games, one of the things that were working very well was even Eddie Tagset incorporated himself even inside the box, inside the 18, mm-hmm. and they didn't allow that either this time. So, I mean, they kind of kept Nashville enclosed on a middle game right there in the half, which it got complicated because it seems like Nashville is been getting used in good games to get more, to use more space, especially to the outside, going with Nakhar and Christian on one side, on the other side, Novitz in this case was
Madrigal.
Madrigal. Well, Madrigal wasn't playing there, so it was
Muil,
right?
Yeah,
Muil. So it's kind of got in close Nashville in there, and that was a pretty good tactic, I believe, from Dallas that didn't give this team so much liberty. Okay, is that something that Nashville needs to work on? I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so, because, I mean, if these coaches saw all that and they were able to do something to prevent it, then others will do.
Well.
And you know, and Nashville now has to be ready to counterattack with a different tactical maneuver.
Yeah, and, you know, BJ Callahan mentioned about that, you know, when I asked him about that the three midfielders, you know, and I'm curious. Well, what were your thoughts initially before we get to the clip there, Claudia? What were your thoughts about the three midfielders? Did you like the 4-3-3?
It's not that I didn't like it or not. I mean, I'm not. I'm just saying that perhaps when this team looks good, better, it's when they have the four right there, mm-hmm. 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1-2-1-1.
The
4-2-2-2,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not the three formation. It just didn't work because it kind of allowed Dallas to cut the two front lines in half. Mm-hmm. I mean, but they put something in between those two lines, and that's what caused the whole issue, because it wasn't, and there was no easy transition, translation of the ball. The passing lanes were not open.
And that really cuts
a lot of stuff of this team, you know. Nashville is known, especially under BJ, that it's always been able to get those passes across lines, and you know, it, all of a sudden very soon, they're always working behind the middle, the first wall that most teams put in the middle of the half, and they're already over in the box, in their boxes. This time, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And here's it's not that they didn't work. It's just that, again, I'm not sure if that's something that tactically Nashville or VJ is going to keep doing for whatever reason. It needs to be fine.
And again, I mentioned it was a growing pain, you know, like at the beginning, this was a growing pain. But this is what BJ Callahan had to say on the three midfielders.
You know, it was kind of one of the first times I think we may have done that. And it was, I thought they did a really good job. I thought each one of their qualities kind of came out. I thought Matt did a good job sitting in the middle of the field, getting the ball left and right, and also trying to open it up. And I thought, you know, you saw, especially in the first half, like the deep runs from Eddie and Patrick were really opening up the game for us. And I thought, you know, that was some positive moments. And then defensively, like, you know, those guys, they're the engine, right? They cover so much ground. They cover so many second balls and duels. So collectively, again, another group to be positive on and continue to build and grow.
So there you had it there. Go ahead, Claudio.
In your opinion, because, I mean, I think – well, like most of the time, BJ is right about what he saw in the game when he was looking. He sees the game very well, even when he's there coaching, besides whatever tactical plan he had before the games. But, I mean, do you think that midfield looked as sharp this time?
It wasn't like sharp like we've seen in games past. Again, I'm going to describe it as a growing pain. I think this was a taste. You know, if you're describing food, a taste tester. To me, this was a taste tester for a formation. Because if Nashville, we recognized last season with Nashville that they had to do everything on the right flank. Now they got Daniel Lovitz, who has quality minutes as a veteran left back. They can now swing the ball to the left side of the field in the 4-2-2 formation. It took them a season to kind of get that. Whereas now they have a 2 to 3 year window to win things. I think now is the time to do it, especially at the beginning of the season, to kind of experiment some things. And again, to me, I'm a big fan of the 4-3-3. I think that, to me, that's one of my favorite formations to use in all of soccer, because it just, there's a, again, me being an AC Milan fan, the 2008 era of AC Milan, where you had, you know, your Andrea Pirlos, and then he was in front. They had two midfielders. One of them escaped me, but he had Gennaro Gattuso as one of them. And they kind of had a wall in front of him. Every time he wanted to put those diagonal balls, they would have a little wall in front of him to kind of just cascade that over to the right and left flanks. So to me, I think that's what Nashville tried to experiment with a little bit. BJ was right in that clip that, yeah, they definitely do exploit. They definitely did go up the field and kind of exploit some offensive attacks. And then defensively, when he started describing them as the engines, that is true. I mean, they are the engines. But defensively, I think there was some hiccups, if that's the best way to put it. I don't know. Yeah. Actually, I don't know if hiccups is the right word. I think it was just a surprise in some aspects.
Well, I don't know if I was surprised at all. I mean, this is not me thinking that way. I think one of the guys that, I mean, we had a, what's his name? Our friend that was with us last week, talking about the play-by-play by
Tony Husband.
Tony was the one that said it, that perhaps right there in the back we're gonna be some stuff going on sometimes that is not gonna be completely and especially talking about Maxwell Bouletzi, perhaps a little less from Jason Palacios, but that was part of it. I think that really proved that, well, what he knows about football and watching football so many years, and that's part of what it is. And I believe I would love to say no, but most probably I would be wrong if I said that we're gonna see stuff like that in this long season in a lot of games. Hopefully the least games possible, but it might happen. I mean, Willets is still a young guy, a lot to learn yet, especially in a new team. It seems like Palacios is more and more mature in the way he plays, but still, he can come up with some mistakes. And we saw some of that stuff going on this past weekend that obviously, I'm sure BJ is already working on it. We probably can ask him tomorrow at the press conference. But that's part of what it is. And again, I guess it goes back to what you keep saying, a learning process, even a learning process. Those four guys in there, even though they seem like they've been playing together for a long time, they haven't. I mean, really. So that's part of what it is.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And kind of transitioning away from the Dallas game, and one key point that we all saw was, you know, Matt Corcoran and also the Christian Espinoza missed opportunities. You know, you speak on that real quick, Claudio. I know you were pretty upset. About that.
Yeah. I was I say, well, when I say missed opportunities, sometimes it's because sometimes games are so close, so tight, that you're gonna have one, maybe two, if you're lucky, opportunities to actually get the points. And Nashville did have those opportunities, especially in the legs of Christian Espinosa, which, like I told BJ when I asked the question, I mean, 9 out of 10 times he'd probably take them all. You know, not only scores one, but twice. But this time it didn't happen. This is what BJ had to say about that, the fact that Christian missed both opportunities.
I need to talk to Christian. He knows that he should have finished them. That's no problem. We're going to keep getting him into good goal scoring chances. And listen, he will, he's going to make many more of those this season if we can continue to get him in that good of a spot.
Well, Nick, hopefully the last part that he said doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's not as clear. It's kind of ambiguous. Was he mentioning more of those mistakes, or he's going to score more of those opportunities?
No, score more of those opportunities. And it's a little telling to me, to be honest with you, Claudio, because you look at this 4-3-3 formation. Maybe it's an experiment. Maybe it's just to get over, you know, for the time being without Sam Surridge. But if it is something that they use going forward, as in a formation to rely on, maybe that is an opportunity for him. Because, say, Hani does drop more centrally into that deeper midfield role, they have those overlapping runs with Madrigal and Espinoza. Well, what if we all saw what Madrigal can do in the first couple games. He likes to take defenders head on, cross it into the box, and if it's on the other side of the box, guess who's there? Christian Espinoza. So that to me was a little telling because, again, these are growing pains with the 4-3-3 if they do decide to go forward with that. But again, I don't see it as a full staple.
That's why when we discuss and talk about soccer like this, we run into the possibility, big possibility, huge possibility of contradicting ourselves, even with the same show.
Oh, absolutely.
Because as I said, you know, like I said, there was some hiccups, like you said, on the game, trying to use that formation. But at the same time, when you look at Christian Espinoza getting inside the box, having those two opportunities, that means that a lot of the 4-3-3 also work.
Mm-hmm.
Also work, because that put him in there, and that particular excellent position, great passes as well, great assists. I think, I don't know if both of them were from Hani, or at least one was.
One was from Hani for sure. One. Yeah.
Well, if he was there, it's because that tactical drawing, maybe it does work. It just needs more time. That's all that I think. That's what it is. So
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Corcoran. Well, you already mentioned a little Corcoran. Well, I already said, well, it's just that he needs to say, I'm sure this, and if it's going to happen, better happens at the beginning of the year, not late, when in a very important game, perhaps when Nashville needs to win the 3 points or not. You know, there's no more options. At least right now, starting, and he's going to be one game, I believe.
Well, yeah, I believe one game.
One game, and then he'd probably be ready to come back, and then he'd be a better player just because of that fact. Well, but the only good thing about it is good that it happened early.
Mm-hmm. Now, mentioning the whole situation with Matt Corcoran, the red card being out for a game, so forth, that, I think, plays a big impact into Saturday.
You think so?
I think so, because now you have to play.
Yeah, an option, of course. I believe. I agree.
Now you have to play Eddie Tagseth. You have to play Patrick Yazbek. I'm not saying that they're, you know, heavy legged or anything, but your depth is not there really, because normally you have Corcoran to go in for one of them. Sure, you have Brian Acosta, but you're going up against a pretty gritty Minnesota team for the most part. James Rodriguez is coming in here. This is a Minnesota club that was near the, I'd say, bottom of the totem pole a little bit in the standings. And then when the interim head coach came in and took over full time, gradually started building and building and building. And then they became a top six team. And that's kind of where they're at right now, is a top six team. Sure, it's only a couple games into the season, but overall, they're a decently, you know, well-sided club.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things, and perhaps I'm going to use a cliche phrase that we hear so much in sports and in football and soccer, where he said, well, somebody needs to come up to the plate and take advantage of the opportunity. I mean, I'm thinking about Brian Acosta. I'm thinking about, you mentioned him.
Don't forget about Charles-Emile Brunet from Canada, the young kid. I mean,
any of them, if I was any one of them, I'd say, it's too bad that that happened to Corcoran, but I'm ready. I'm going to be ready. If I get the call, I mean, if I get the start, even better. I'm readier, I would say. But if I get the call from the bench, I'm going to make sure that those minutes, whatever they are, I can show the coach that I'm an option to start, I'm an option for more minutes. This is those opportunities that some players on the bench can take really advantage of. I mean, so I'm hoping to see something like that in case BJ has to go to the bench or even as a starter. I don't know what he might be planning for this game. But yeah, if he wants to come up with something different, something, you know, that we might not even be thinking about it, this is the chance for one of those guys to be the bright addition to the team, starting or not, and show the team, well, hold on. I mean, now I have to think about even more. Like he's been saying all season long, all preseason, I'm having a hard time choosing the starting lineup. Well, mm-hmm. let's make it harder for him. Let's make it harder for him and make sure against a very good team. Because I was talking, and we're gonna show this tomorrow, even though it's in Spanish. I was talking to this afternoon with Tony Corky, which is one of the biggest TV announcers in all sports, in football especially, and he's also with Apple TV. He'll be the color commentator in this Saturday's game.
Okay.
And I was talking to him, and he was saying that we agreed that Minnesota. It's kind of one of those cases where you expect a team to take longer to be showing what they have, especially when they have so many switches in the game. I mean, the team is beginning with a new coach, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden here's a team that is doing really good already, undefeated. He tied a game in Austin. They beat Cincinnati, even though it was a home. Still, Cincinnati is one of the favorites to win the East. So we're talking about a good team, and let's not forget. Even without James Rodriguez yet,
yeah,
he's not even suited up.
Right.
Hopefully he does for Nashville because I want to see him play. Anyways, good. We all want to see good players. I do all the time. If there's a good player, I mean, I'm not one of those that say I hope Messi doesn't play. No, I hope Messi plays
yeah.
every single game
because you want to beat them at their best.
Yes, you gotta beat them at the best. And so if James Rodriguez plays this Saturday, hopefully he plays a great game, and if Nashville wins. That would be a great win because he's there. He makes it harder. He makes it more difficult. He makes it all kinds. He adds a lot to the game. But there's all other pieces from this team that not even started, and the team's still doing good. So, you know, we were discussing that with Tony today, that Nashville has a full plate again, even at home.
Mm-hmm.
Home is an advantage. We discussed that about with him also. And he was saying something very particular that I like our listeners to listen to tomorrow during the our next podcast, which is going to be in Spanish for all of you. But he says something very, very important. I'll tell you off microphone because I don't want to, you know.
Yeah, give away.
I want to keep the surprise.
Right. I love a good surprise.
It's very interesting, though.
Okay. I love that. I love that good surprise. You know, and adding on to just the conversation we're having about the midfield going into Minnesota, you want to beat them at their best, the quality. I don't know. I'm intrigued about Reed Baker-Whiting. You know, the one time we did see him was in the second leg at Geodis Park where he made his club debut in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and it was at left back, that yeah. attacking left back role. Online, you know, everybody says he's the defender/midfielder. You wonder if Nashville kind of places him in a midfielder role. Like, again, I go back to the word I've been...
Well, I don't see why not.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I've been stressing this word, and obviously BJ and Mike Jacobs and everybody over there, they seem to be all on the same page. The one word I keep hearing is versatility. They want to have versatility with this young group, and you have to because of the depth and the requirements of the game in general. You're going to have guys that are going to have heavy legs at some point in the season. There's going to be injuries. You're going to need guys to play multiple different, you know, multiple positions, and... We saw that last year with Matthew Corcoran, who played midfield. And then at one point when they were playing Inter-Miami, I think it was the last regular season home game for Nashville, they played him at left back. They played Corcoran at left back because they were forced to. And I think that gets lost in the sauce too much where Nashville is a really good side, even if you don't recognize the quality they have on the bench. Like this team is slowly grabbing some quality players on the bench, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't make this sound like some kind of a nickname that I'm gonna start using for him or anything like that. But if it's anything similar to a chameleon, that's
you're right.
That would be Reed Baker Whiting.
Yeah,
in this team, I mean, he can put any colors and still be bright. You know, and that's what it is. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this BJ tries to say, well, let me try something even different this time, and I'm going to go left with the Reed,
mm-hmm.
Baker Whiting. Why not? I mean, he's got the qualities. He can use both legs. He's young. He runs back and forth. I can tell you what he'll do for sure. He'll be a big help for Lovitz. And that really brings this tactical maneuver that I believe is might work very well, because if there is two guys in this team that can actually interchange one to the other, that would be Dan Lovitz and Baker and Baker whining for sure. So both they was know how to play both positions. That'd be awesome to see.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome to see. If Lovitz gets caught up there, well, he knows there's somebody playing behind him that know the position very well and vice versa. So I mean that'd be interesting. I'd be happy to see something like that going on this Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, again, I look at the situation is if they need a midfielder, Reed Baker Whiting will be the guy to slot in there. And again, you still have other guys. You have Charles Emile Burnett. You have Brian Acosta. There are a few other guys on the lineup that you probably could grab. But again, you're more than likely going to run out Tag Seth and Yaz back out there unless something else changes in training. If someone picks up an injury, hopefully that's not the case. But something along those lines. But yeah.
Well, Knight is another option. Very good one. Very good option.
You're very right. Yeah. Jordan Knight. Wow. Thank you for bringing up his name because we didn't really get to discuss much about the Ottawa second leg where they scored 5 goals. What a goal by Jordan Knight. Oh, the control, the way you're able to open the hip and then just take a one touch and then take a big old swing at it and just buried it. And again, I wish I had the clip on me, but I don't have it on me right now. I even asked him about it after the game, and he was like, yeah. I mean, if somebody like Matthew Corcoran throws a ball out there or kicks a ball like that, you got to finish it. And it was so candid of him to say it that way because Matthew Corcoran's been the heartbeat of this midfield. There's no other way to describe it. You know what I mean?
No. I mean, it was just the truth. And talking about Knight, you know, he could be a starter.
Mm-hmm.
Just as good as anybody else. It just happens that there is a couple of players that are slightly ahead of him in experience and all that stuff. But if BJ was forced to give him more minutes, even as a starter, he would not be disappointed at all. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, just that there's options in there. That's for sure.
One thing that it grabbed my attention in just this team in general is Wubens Pacious. I wasn't quite familiar with him last season because he played for Tampa Bay and I know he was on loan, but scoring 17 goals across all competitions for the Rowdies in the USL is impressive.
Yes, it is.
But the fact of the matter is you're able to translate that to the next level at MLS. Again, the two games he started were in Ottawa and versus Ottawa in Nashville. Scoring a goal in each of those appearances, fantastic. That's why I look back at that FC Dallas game, and if Nashville were to have gone with their typical 4-2-2-2, I think Wubens Pacious would have been perfect.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how much confidence. Obviously, BJ has, you know, immense confidence in this side, but especially in all of his players. But I wonder if he would have started Wubens Pacious up top with Hani kind of offsetting behind him. I wonder what that would have created. Because we know that Wubens is more of a back-to-goal type guy where he receives the ball. To me, I think it would have been beneficial because Hani likes to drop into that midfielder role. If Wubens were to grab a ball in an aerial duel or something from outside the flank or something and receives it, is able to take a one-touch, pass it back to Hani, and guess what Hani does? Doing what Corcoran's doing in the midfield, just at a higher mark on the field outside the top of the 18. Play it out to Madrigal. Play it out to Espinoza. And then after that, when Wubens passes it off, he can make a turn behind the defender and he's running into the middle of the box ready for the header. He's ready for it. I think something like that would have been a little bit better for this team. But again, the 4-3-3 was a little bit of a growing pain. I think they were trying to experiment with something and have a secondary formation going forward.
In the case of Wubens, I mean, I wondered myself when the minutes that we've seen from him, they're all positive, I might add.
Yeah.
Why wasn't he brought in last season when the team really needs him? But the problem, there was an issue there with the documents and stuff, right? Like he couldn't be added to the because otherwise you will not be able to explain yourself why this team had such a need in there in the front line, and you had a guy waiting for such a long time like Wubens was there. I mean, I believe they wouldn't have been that particular issue, which is out of your hand with the papers that play, you know, foreign players in the league.
Sure.
Just like anywhere else, he would have been part of the team since London long ago, and maybe he would have been already an earlier answer for this team, which he has been in the CONCA champions already anyway. So
yeah,
and that might be the only reason. Some people would say, well, why was this guy over there in Alabama and not coming in to play? He couldn't.
Well,
the team wanted, but
it's know. More of this, Claudio. It's more about when he was in Tampa Bay, you got to remember who's already on the roster here, Teal Bunbury. And you're not going to replace a veteran in Teal Bunbury. He's earned his stripes, man. He's earned his spot on this team at the time. And he was on an expiring contract. So you're going to let that thing run out a little bit. You know, you got to let that run out. Whereas for a guy like Wubens, he's young. He's getting the experience. Let him get the experience at the second level of American soccer. That's okay. I'm all right with that. And I think they did a really good job with it, the development process. Now that he's here, it's his time to shine. And he's doing it. And that's what I love so much about this club right now, especially with this roster, is Warren Madrigal. To me, it was like we understood what Nashville was getting, but not to that degree. Nobody saw that he would exude that confidence. And you were the one, and thank you for doing this, when there was a press conference / media scrum in the tunnel there, Warren Madrigal, after having a goal and two assists in the CONCACAF Champions Cup game, asked him, you know, being one of the guys on your home debut, have two assists, that's impressive because, you know, Terry Henry was the only other guy to really do that right now.
Yeah,
in MLS play when he was there with the Red Bulls in 2010. And you translated it for me perfectly, and I appreciate that. And it was along the lines of, you know, just it's, you know, a good thing to be compared to a guy like that, but to keep a consistent mindset going forward. And to me, it just goes, it reminds me a lot of Matthew Corcoran, a young Matthew Corcoran last year. The fact that you can have that, you know, cool pizzazz about yourself, but then keep a cool, calm, collected, professional aspect of it. Just pure genius. Good job on him.
And we will notice how Madrigal was happy in the mix on that day when we interviewed him and everything after such a great game that he had. And at the same time, we also noticed, I don't know if you did, but I think you did as well, how frustrated he was after the last game when he had to come out. He knew he had him. This is a young kid who's got experience. It's kind of difficult to understand sometimes when you see like guys like Matthew, guys like Warren,
yeah,
and believe that they have, and even Matthew has even more experience than Warren though, because of where he's playing. And Warren knows exactly better than anybody else when he's played a good game or when he hasn't. He's not happy. He's never happy as fully happy, but he was frustrated after this past game because he knew he had a chance there to play in a position that he likes to play with, which is up front, and well, things just didn't work out for him. But it wasn't all his fault. I mean, not the whole team didn't function as well as they've done before. And some people would say, well, maybe his position is actually on the flank, left hand. Maybe when the full squad is there. I mean, full squad. Having Sam Surridge in.
Yeah, having your true rotation.
Yeah, but still, I mean, that will allow, for people that doesn't know Warren, his life has always been a striker. He's a striker. He's always been right there. That position he played against Dallas is what he's played for a long time. So he knows very well that position, and that's where his frustration came from, because now he could have probably made more mistakes playing on the flank than there. He'd be happier. And, you know, I wish I could have talked to him after that game in Dallas, but to ask him probably the same question, and he probably would have been the first one to say, hey, I'm not as happy as that day.
Right, exactly. Well, that leads us into a great transition point. Going into Saturday's match against Minnesota, your thoughts, Claudio? You think they can do this?
I just think so. I think so. But there's a lot of stuff that on the side of Nashville. I think I agree that with some people that are sorry saying that at this point Nashville is a better team, you know. And a lot of why should they come? Doesn't mean that the victory is guaranteed. No, of course not. I mean, all games, you have to play all games. But still, the fact that BJ has been with this team longer, not the Minnesota coach yet. I guess for the same reason, BJ knows this team better than probably the coach does on his own guys.
Yeah.
Nashville has pretty much everybody available, except for Corcoran due to the red card, but everybody's there. Minnesota is having some issues with the guys that haven't been played, like Nicolas Romero, for instance, hasn't played at all.
Right.
Peter Schrout, no, he hasn't been available. Dominic Fritz, so we're talking about four or five guys. Owens Jean and James Rodriguez but we're talking about five guys here, and in a team, in a season like they are, and the games like the way that they're playing the MLS, having five guys that are not available to you, especially when you starting to know the team, all the structure around him, like the new coach has, then you say, well, I mean, this should be for Nashville to take. And if you add to that the atmosphere, the fans, the castle, then you should become out of the big door in this game, I believe.
I mean, in the castle, guess what? It's Barbie night on Friday. I mean, on Saturday night. It's your Barbie. Favorite, Claudio. Be ready. Get your Barbie bucket hat.
Barbie night.
Yeah, Barbie
favorite.
Night.
My favorite, you said?
Yeah, your favorite.
As long as it's pink.
Yeah, it is pink from what I've seen online. I wonder if Ken will be there. I'm not sure if Barbie and Ken, the duo, will be there. Yeah, but
I don't know about Ken.
Yeah,
he's been in the doghouse lately.
Yeah. Not good. Not good. We'll see. But no, just looking at this game, overall, I mean, yeah, you're right. Minnesota is a tough team and not having a few key players, but me being Italian and along with the Talking Calcio podcast, you got to mention the youngster himself, and that's Kelvin Yeboah. I mean, the 25-year-old striker, he's playing pretty good so far. Two starts, two goals. I mean,
he's good.
You can't say he's not a good player, man. I mean, he's, again, me being an Italian soccer fan.
Who's going to be the duel there? Is it going to be Jason or Maxwell?
I think it'll be Maxwell. I think it'd be Maxwell. If That'd not, I could see Jason being the one with the duels, and then Maxwell recovering with the ball, you know, deflected somewhere, and then going down the field and you know, accelerating play quickly. I could see that.
I mean, if you ask me to choose, I want to see Maxwell and that duel with him.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind it at all. But no, this is something I want to get to briefly before we get to our predictions real quick. The fact of the matter is, Italy is missing a number nine. They are missing a number nine on so many different levels. It's unfortunate the MLS kind of dilutes that a little bit, where a lot of MLS players that are young don't get called up to the national team because they don't see the MLS as a true competitor league. But I mean, it's getting there. The consistency of the product is getting better and better every single season. But Kelvin Yeboah is somebody that Italy has just been needing for so long now. They've been missing the Del Pieros, the Christian Vieris, the Luca Tonis of the world, the Alberto Gilardinos, the Fabio Quagliarellas, the Antonio Di Natales. They've been missing those true goal scorers. And Yeboah is one of those guys. Being 6 foot, I mean, that's crazy. The fact that you're a 25-year-old kid that is 6 foot tall, that can win stuff with your head and kick it in the back of the net, to me, that's just something that Italy needs to look at. Of course, they're on the cusp of possibly missing another World Cup, and they need a guy. So I
hope they don't miss it.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do.
I hope not too, man.
I hope. I mean, not only because of I've always loved Italy in many ways, but this football, the culture they play, but also the fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fans really are something else, and we need to have lots of them in the U.S. for the World Cup. But in terms of Yeboah, I mean, this is one guy that most especially when a team is lacking the scoring power that it needs in particular games like this, you shouldn't miss. You have to have him in there. I'm not saying he's going to be started or anything, but you have to have him there, because having that option there makes the other team think about it. Well, I mean, if this guy comes in at any time, he might do it, and he should. So same thing might happen on Saturday. Nashville has to be very careful with him, for sure.
Okay, really, I mean, now it's time to give those predictions, Claudio. What is your scoreline and your projection?
Scoreline, I'm going to give I always have a hard time when I have to try to give the other team goals, but I'm going to go 3-1.
3-1. Okay. Goal scorers?
Goal scorers, I'm going to see, well, Sam comes back from whatever injury, whatever happened to him, and says,
illness.
I'm here. I'm here again. This is it. Score again. I cannot leave off Honey responding to that. It seems like anytime Sam scores, Honey's ready to do the same and not be left behind. And let me see. I'm gonna go with a black horse here in this one. I want to go black horse.
The dark horse?
A dark horse. I'm gonna go to Dan Lovitz scoring ahead again.
Okay.
Dan Lovitz.
Not too bad.
That goal.
I'm going to go with Nashville winning at home, and I say they win. Oof. You said what? 2-1, 3-1? You said 3-1?
I said 3-1.
I'm going to go 2-0. I know that's not a popular pick, but I'm going to go 2-0. Brian Schwaki, out of the games that he has started, I mean, he's been phenomenal all season long. Yeah. He started all four games, three clean
and the
sheets.
Only reason, to
three
be clean with you, sheets. The only reason I give Minnesota a goal, mm-hmm. not because of Brian. Brian is awesome, and I like to see. I mean, I love for him to have another zero game against this time.
Right.
But I have a wish.
Oh.
And it belongs to the other team. I would love to see James Rodriguez scoring one goal in Nashville.
If he plays, we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But anyways, okay. That's just because that's a kind of a selfish.
That's okay. That's a soccer fan for you. You can't blame that. But no, yeah, that's
great players.
I'm going to go.
This is the first time I ever going to see him alive. So.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, I'm going to go 2-0. Nashville wins, and Brian Schwaki gets another clean sheet. Who are the goal scorers? I'm going to go with. This is tough. I'm going to go Warren Madrigal, and I'm going to go Hani Mukhtar.
I like them.
I think Sam kind of struggles a little bit getting back, maybe because the illness, I'm not too sure. But I'm going to go Madrigal and Surge. And I say in the order of Madrigal first, Surge, or I'm sorry, Madrigal first, Hani second. There you go.
Hani's like, Hani closes the deal.
Yep. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight, Claudio.
Is it going to be a full stadium or not?
Yeah, I think so. If the weather's nice, I would. Nice. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. I think so for sure. But we'll see more of you guys on Saturday. If you see us, say hey. But this is it for the Talking Calcio podcast and the Your Game, Our Passion podcast here on Claudio Villalobos, Nashville Total Sports. And you can listen on the Game Nashville Sports Network on the Talking Calcio podcast. Hey, Saturday mornings, you can hear us on the radio. So check that out. 6 to 7 a.m.
Just a small invitation for tomorrow night, 7:30. I'm going to have this kind of sort of like this, but in Spanish. And we'll have the interview with Tony Kirky, which happened this afternoon. He's got a lot of nice things to say. If you speak Spanish, I invite you to be there. If you think you understand Spanish, I invite you to be there. If you don't know Spanish, still want to follow the captions, come on along and listen to us.
Spanish class at 7:30. Got it. Okay, perfect. Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate you listening, watching in. We'll see you on Saturday for Nashville versus Minnesota. Hey, ci vediamo presto.